Hi there, I'm Amy Griffiths and I'm one of the journalists in Manx Radio's newsroom and you're listening to Newscast.
My name's Brian Dickey, I'm the chief scientist at the Motor Neuron Disease Association. To talk about the disease, you first of all have to understand what motor neurons are. And motor neurons are the nerves that basically connect the old grey matter in our brain and our spinal cord to the muscles and the various parts of the body. So they're very, very thin wires, microscopically thin wires, but they can be up to a metre long that connect to the muscles and help us to convert thought into action. And in motor neuron disease, those nerves, those wires start to degenerate. And this means that a person can become progressively weak. They lose the ability to control their muscles waste. And it affects a person's ability to walk, to talk, to feed themselves. And eventually it will affect the respiratory muscles as well.
So the prognosis is not a good one, really.
No, 50% of people will sadly die within 2 years of diagnosis. There are exceptions, of course, Stephen Hawking being probably the best known example, who lived for over 50 years with this disease. And for about 10% of people, they will live for 10 years or longer. And it's actually one of the key research questions is, what is it that in these people that maybe helps protect against this disease, doesn't stop it, but helps to slow it down? And if we could understand that, it would give us a route, hopefully, into developing treatments.
And how common is it?
It affects about 2 people per 100,000 of the population per year. That's actually in the same ballpark as multiple sclerosis. But of course, everybody has heard of multiple sclerosis. Not so many people have heard about MND. And the reason for that is you have to look at the disease prevalence, because people live with MS for 10, 20, 30 years or longer. But because people with MND usually die so quickly, the number alive at any one time is much, much smaller. So in the Isle of Man, for example, the population is about 90,000, I think. We may expect at any one time perhaps 6 or 7 people to have MND.
And it does feel like it's becoming increasingly more high profile, because we have had a number of high profile people being diagnosed with it. Stephen Hawking, as you mentioned, in the last week, Lewis Moody, the former England rugby captain. And what does that do in terms of, I suppose, raising awareness of the disease and putting it on the map in some ways?
Yes, people like Doddy Weir, Rob Burrow, Kevin Sinfield, of course, and that whole story between Kevin and Rob, and now Lewis Moody, really do raise the profile. And they've helped the charities to make a nuisance of ourselves with the UK government, I guess. And we managed to get the UK government 2 or 3 years ago to commit to funding more MND research. The funding hasn't come quite in the way we would have anticipated. It's come in kind of dribs and drabs, various pots of money for various activities. But the charities have come together to work to try and ensure that, almost like glue these pots of money together to make sure that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts.
You mentioned a number of other rugby players there. Is there something in that, because it does seem to be becoming increasingly common amongst rugby players, or certainly we are starting to hear more about it?
That's certainly an area that's being looked at. Why is it that certain professional sports people seem to be diagnosed with this disease more than others? The evidence isn't clear-cut, I have to say, and it's probably a lot more complicated than a simple issue of you play rugby, you get a knock on the head, you're more likely to develop a neurodegenerative disease. Many neurologists will say that they never diagnose MND in somebody who's chronically unfit and overweight. It always tends to be people who are fit and healthy. And maybe there's something about the genetic makeup of these individuals that they're just made to be more fit and healthy. And as a result, they're more active. They run marathons. They play in sports. Sometimes they might get a little bit better at that sport and end up playing in the top upper echelons. And maybe they're wearing out their motor neurons a little bit faster. But we do know it is incredibly complex. It's called a multifactorial disease because there are many, many issues that probably have to work in combination over decades. A little bit like if you imagine a set of balancing scales, like the scales of justice, it's like grains of sand on the scales. And some of those will be genetic, you're born with them. Some of them will be environmental and lifestyle factors. But after maybe 40, 50, 60 years, there's enough there that the scales finally tilt.
And it is something that has been a topic of conversation quite a lot in the media, obviously with the assisted dying debate and things like that. So has that in some ways helped to fund research as well, do you think? And where are we up to with research at the moment?
Certainly, maybe 20, 25 years ago, when I was first getting involved in MND research, it was a scientific backwater. It was a Cinderella disease. But we've seen incredible advances in understanding the disease over the past two decades. And it's really propelled MND from, as I said, this Cinderella disease right to the forefront of neurodegeneration alongside Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease. And we're starting, I think, to see the first green shoots of turning this knowledge into effective treatments. There's a drug that's currently being reviewed by the National Institute for Health and Care Excellence called Tofersen, which is a gene-based therapy. And it's only effective in a small genetic subgroup in the disease, about 3% of all cases in the UK. But in those cases, in some people, it seems to stabilize their disease for years. So that is that first crack in the open door. And now we can hopefully push through, develop better treatments for MND in the coming years. And also, of course, as a spin-off, take that understanding into the more common diseases like Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease.
You're giving a talk here actually called It's Not All Bad News. So how hopeful are you about the future of treatment for MND?
I do think that of all the neurodegenerative diseases I mentioned, I think MND is going to be the one that we crack first. Research is incredibly slow. It's not like the media presents it. You know, I often talk about the rule of Star Trek. The last 5 minutes, somebody snaps their finger and says, let's reverse the dilithium flow through the phase energizer, Captain. And in the last 5 seconds, the ship's saved from blowing up. And that's how the media portrays science, and that's how the public perceives science. The reality is that it's a long, slow process of hypothesis and experimentation, of trial and error. But I really do believe that the train is picking up speed and heading in the right direction. I just can't say when it's going to arrive at the station.
When it comes to research, how important is it to take influence from people across the board, and it's not sort of that silo mentality of research, and that it's actually a really collaborative effort?
It's absolutely essential that we don't work in silos. This is a complex disease. It's going to require complex solutions, and certainly the research is increasingly complex as well. So one of the things the MND Association does is we almost act as a dating agency for the scientific community, because we're able to put people in touch with each other. And one of the reasons we can do that is because we organise the world's biggest scientific and medical meeting on the disease, the annual International Symposium. So we're going to be in San Diego this year in December. We were in Montreal last year, and we had over 1,200 scientists, physicians, healthcare professionals from all over the world, and indeed, excitingly, an increasing number of drug company representatives as well. Now, the drug companies, let's face it, aren't here to make the world a better place. They're here to sell drugs to keep the shareholders happy. But the fact that there's so many of them coming to the MND meetings suggests that they think there is an opportunity here. And that's fantastic. That means that all this knowledge we've accumulated over the past 20, 30 years, we might actually be able to start to turn that into treatments.
Thank you for making it to the end of the Manx Radio newscast. You are obviously someone with exquisite taste. May I politely suggest you might want to subscribe to this and a wide range of Manx Radio podcasts at your favourite podcast provider, so our best bits will magically appear on your smartphone. Thank you.